of the crop.
Welcome to the 146th edition of the Gooner Podcast. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, and we are recording on the Wednesday evening after the 4-0 Premier League victory over Watford, and a few days before Arsenal make their final trip to Upton Park to play West Ham. So let's start with the panel introductions. Firstly, after last month's first in the history of our podcast, with all three panellists rejecting the offer of free alcohol, we have another first this time around, because all three of our panellists are of that dying breed, Arsenal shareholders. So it's a warm welcome to Stan Kroenke, Alisher Usmanov and Piers Morgan. Or maybe not. No, we have far more sense in the room, so here goes. Firstly, founder of the Gooner, editor of said publication for its first 13 seasons, and now publisher. A regular panellist and the man who funds the food and drink we enjoy on these evenings, it's good to have him back. Hello to Mr. Mike Francis.
Good evening, everyone.
Next up, a man who I've been trying to get on this podcast for longer than I care to recall, partly due to his inside track on the workings of the club, and also because he speaks a lot of sense. He has been a board member of the Arsenal Supporters Trust since its inception, well over a decade ago, and he is an expert on the club's finances. It's a long-delayed pleasure to introduce Mr. Nigel Phillips.
Delighted to join you, Kevin.
Thank you, Nigel. And last but not least, I am especially grateful to this guest for agreeing to step in at the last minute. As David Udo informed me this morning, he was too ill to make it and under doctor's orders to remain in bed. Get well soon, David. However, it is good to have our final panellist here, as he will provide some balance to these discussions, being more optimistic about the club's position than many, as evidenced by his occasional contributions to the Gooner website, including an offering this very morning in praise of Alex Iwobi. So my personal thanks for changing his plans and joining us this evening. It's a very warm welcome to another Gooner podcast debutant, Mr. Ian Tanner.
Thank you, Kevin, for inviting me. Hello, everyone.
Right, so on to our reason for being here, Arsenal Football Club and discussion of. And I'm going to start with an email submitted by one of our listeners, Mr. Robert Gregory, who asks, I appreciate that the season is not over, but have the panel enjoyed it thus far? Ian, have you enjoyed the season so far?
Have I enjoyed it? Yes and no. I try and look at the positives, because I think probably a lot of people, the majority, look at the negatives. Would I have settled for being 11 points behind the leaders with a game in hand, six, seven games to go, and out at the last 16 stage and out of the other two competitions? Well, yeah, probably not. I would have wanted more. But I think there's been some interesting performances, and I've been particularly bullish from the last three, starting with the away defeat at Barcelona, where we scored 20, well, sorry, didn't score 22 goals, but we had about 22 attempts on target. I think we were superb at Everton, and as I wrote, as you mentioned and published on today online, I think that what I'm seeing now is this whole team growing, I think Iwobi has just been fantastic. I'm sure we'll talk about him later. You know, when you think you've got the likes of Wilshere, Cazorla, Ramsey, Flamini, and I'm trying to think of the other big one, Oxlade-Chamberlain. Are they, when they come back, are they going to get in the team? I think I see a lot of positives. So looking forward rather than back, I think there's a lot to be encouraged about.
Nigel, too little, too late over the whole course of the campaign. Enjoyment, is that a good word?
We keep coming back. There must be something about the club which ties us to it, and it is an addiction that we always, or some people have broken. I clearly read you some of your posters. You said they feel so much better for not coming. I have young children who love to come, and I still enjoy it myself. Deep frustration, once again, though. So much, I feel as though it is predictable. We have highs and lows throughout the season, and we're always feeling as though we're so close. And everyone's got their views over what needs to be done. And I agree with Ian. I think there's great quality in the squad. The quality of the players we've got individually rather than possibly collectively is super high. And I'm just really, really wanting something to happen to turn that into what we all want to happen, and that's to be a serious challenger again.
Mike, I was listening to a Sky Sports Sunday supplement recently, and one of the journalists was of the opinion that Arsenal fans are bored. That was their actual word, because they feel there is a repetition in the sequence of events each season. Are you bored?
Yeah, I think I am. I think, you know, the question that you started with was, have you enjoyed this season? And, yeah, you know, you can look back and you go, well, I, you know, the late winner against Leicester was one of those, for me, and I think most people in the ground certainly, you know, euphoric moments. It was great. And if you can't enjoy last-minute winners, then I'd question why you're coming to the games. But that's been one of those, that's a rare moment. You know, we've had a couple, you know, with home victory over Bayern early in the season. That was a really good performance. Man United, the first 15 minutes of that were great. But the remaining 75 minutes were probably quite boring. But that was taking us back to the invincible days, wasn't it, where we would come out, blow teams away early on. But it is, it's so predictable, or I find it very predictable what's going to happen. You know, we've seen it time and time again. We're going to concede goals that we shouldn't do on the break. We're going to have momentary defensive lapses. We're not going to take all the chances we should get. We're going to, you know, we're just not going to be strong enough, and we're going to get outthought and by inferior teams. We've got the ability collectively, as Nigel said, but collectively we don't display that often enough.
Okay. Well, a recent bright spot, as Ian did mention, is the arrival of Alex Iwobi in the first team. It's very early days, but go with your instinct. Nigel, do you think this guy is going to be a first team regular, or are we looking at a flash in the pan?
First team regular for Arsenal?
Yes.
I think he's got every opportunity. I mean, he's a tremendous physical specimen. The reports from the club, from lower down in the club, are that he's got the right attitude, good upbringing. He's obviously got pedigree in the family, so clearly some good guidance there. I find it interesting how he's come into this position, whether it's by design or by accident, but he's clearly taken his chance. And I think he's got a very good prospect. My concern would be that when other players come back, who may be perceived to be more high profile, definitely will be high profile, or manager's favourites, does he get pushed into a different position? Because if you try and play young people out of position, then confidence can go quite quickly. And we've got players at the moment whose confidence is low, senior players whose confidence is low. So I think it's great to see, and it's sort of okay to be blooding him at this time when the season's virtually over and the pressure's off. But I've got great hopes that we could see something great from him.
Ian, the talk is that he's being offered £30,000 a week now.
Right.
Do you think he's going to sign for that in this day and age?
I don't know. If we go back to the original question, though, I really think that he's going to be difficult to get out of the team already. I hear what Nigel's saying, but the same thing, I think, not having got you, Kevin, but people were saying the same thing at Hector Bellerin. When he came in, his debut was against Hull in October of 2014, and I wrote an article called Hector's House. It was a terrible 2-2 draw, but it was a brilliant performance from him, and I was going crazy at the time. And people said, oh no, when Debussy gets back, you know, he'll be out of the team again, or he'll only play in the minor games. And I said, no, I'm not so sure. And, you know, we know Debussy's on loan now. There's no way he's getting anywhere near the Arsenal squad if he's here. Bellerin's done it, and I don't see anyone getting Iwobi out. And you look at what he did in this last game, and I know I'm not asking your £30,000 thing. I guess that might be an interim move, and let's see how he develops. But he laid on the first goal. He had a brilliant right foot shot in the area where nobody dared go near him for some reason, whether it was for the reasons I put in my podcast, my online today, jokingly, I don't know, about having halitosis and body odour problems and so on. There was the left foot shot in the second half that hit the bar. And the fantastic goal that he scored. But if you go back, I don't want to sound too much of an anorak, but if you go back and look at what he did other than that between the 13th and 18th minute, I remember it was on 14 minutes and 27 seconds, he got somebody got the ball into him from the right flank, and he did it on a one-touch through to Sanchez, I think it was. It just opened Watford up like a can of beans, and it was so exciting to see. He did a side flick on about 18 minutes in the box. There were some tremendous touches that you don't really associate with a big man, like the Niall Quinns. People say, oh, he's got more talent than you normally see with a big man. I think this guy's got everything. And we need to get him on a long-term contract, but this is probably an interim move. He's been at Arsenal, Wenger said once recently, since he's 7 or 8, and then he said since he's been 8 or 9. But he's got Arsenal through and through, and... yeah, he's an integral part of this squad now. He's going to keep players out. I've no doubt about that from what I've seen already. You see what he did in Barcelona, what he's done at Everton. Because his Everton goal, he actually started that move, if you recall. He won the ball and laid it off to Hector, peace be unto him, and then he flicked it over the top and he just ran on and he finished it. It's absolutely. I'm so pleased with what I'm seeing.
Mike, I remember we were very enthused about Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain in his early appearances. Do you think Iwobi is offering the team something different from what they've got? And we'll just start with that.
Yeah, I think he... I mean, certainly at the moment, he's playing with the confidence that Chamberlain and, to some extent, Walcott, we haven't seen much of this season. And I think that, that's... to be expected. He's broken into the team. He's young. He's enthusiastic. And frankly, if you can't play with confidence at that stage, then you're probably never going to work. You're never going to do it.
Do you think it's going to be coached out of him?
Well, that's I suppose is the concern. And I have the pleasure of looking at all the comments on the website. So I was reading some of the comments replying to Ian's article today.
I don't look at them.
Yeah, probably. I always say, don't look at the comments if you're the writer. It's not worth it. That's the point a lot of people were making, is that that we've seen players come into break into the team before, where are they now? All the English players get mentioned, but even go back to. I think somebody mentioned Quincy Obey, Lupoli, and players like that who never really broke on to the first team in the way that Iwobi's done. But that's the concern, isn't it? And I think to your point, Kevin, as well, about is he too versatile? Because he's already played in two or three positions, and I'd like to see him just make a position his own. And Wenger's very keen at playing players out wide because he feels that gives them or restricts them a little bit, and they can't go left or right. They've got to come infield all the time, and therefore they've got less options, and he feels that that's better in their development, as we've seen with Ramsey played out there for earlier in his career. I think Wobie's got, from what we can see, looks pretty two-footed, comfortable in both feet. I'd like to see him cut inside, being in more integral in the midfield.
Iwobi broke through from the Arsenal Academy. But since Arsene Wenger has arrived at the club, he is one of the very few that have. And in Iwobi's case, it is early days. We can't say he's an established first-team player yet. So you could count on one hand the ones that have become that from the Academy. Are there any theories as to why we haven't produced more established first-team players from our own youth ranks in the last 20 years? Ian?
I suppose it depends how you define the academy, if that does not sound like a silly thing to say, because, the thing Wenger's done on Arsenal.com now is about a 4-minute about Iwobi, etc., and he's saying that he's proud that he's the latest in a long line to come from to go through from the academy. I mean, who do you include? Do you include Bellerin? I mean, if the anti-Wenger people who are anti-Arsenal and what's going on, they might say, oh, well, but Bellerin's from Barcelona. Or certainly you could say that Walcott, also Chamberlain and Chambers are from Southampton, etc. I guess it depends what one's criterion is. I mean, okay, if you're only going to say Wilshire or and Gibbs, yeah, I take the point. But you know, he tries to take players at a young age, 15, 16, whatever, and then develop them. Often from other clubs, but you know, we're not the only ones to do that.
It's hardly La Masia, is it, Nigel?
I think it's a very tough environment for the larger clubs with large wage bills, big squads, to genuinely bring people through. At a lot of clubs, winning is their number one objective. So to take risk on young players is difficult. There's been exceptions, obviously, at Ferguson at United, but you're not seeing it at Chelsea, you're not seeing it at Man City, because buying is the option. And is it partly our problem? There's always a clamour to spend money. There's money to spend, and do people rather see £25 million spent on someone or a 19-year-old given a chance? And there's nothing to say that £25 million spent on a player is good money spent, because we've all seen plenty of money spent at Arsenal and at other clubs, which frankly is completely wasted. And I won't mention the Gareth Bale money, but look what's left from that. But I think it does call into question the players up to the age of 18 or 21, what is it the academies are trying to produce? Are we producing the one player a decade for Arsenal, or are we producing players for the Championship or for somewhere else? And it doesn't cost a huge amount to run the academy. I mean, let's say it's 5 million a year, something like that. I mean, that's less than Theo's on it in the season, so does it really matter? I just feel sorry for some of the players who've clearly got great ability and will just never play on. And you look at Dele Alli at Tottenham now, who's an England starter. He played 90-plus games at Milton Keynes. And I'm sort of wondering whether it's almost time to say these academies have got to, the boys in the academies have got to be playing proper men's football somewhere, so you know whether they're ready. And the only reason Iwobi's coming in there is because of injuries. It's not because someone's looked at him and said, we've got to give this boy a chance. He's taken an opportunity, but it's out of circumstance rather than design.
Okay. Mike, I mean, do supporters have more of a connection with players if they think they've come from the club ranks?
Well, I think they should do, and I think they probably do over time. But they've got to come in and prove themselves over maybe a year or two. I mean, I remember writing in the Goon way back. I mean, I am going back a long way here, by which I'll give it away by saying it's when Ian Selly made his debut. Mm. And I remember he didn't have a great debut, but the fans were like really supportive of him, and you could feel that just in the ground. And I'm not sure that would happen now. I think if we threw in a young kid now and they made a few mistakes, we might have got on the player's back, but we damn sure he'll get on Wenger's back for going, oh, why are you blooding him now? He's clearly not ready. So, you know, and I think, I know Ian said it in the article, and Nigel alluded to it there as well. You know, if we'd have gone out and paid £20 million on a player of Iwobi's stature in January, everyone would be raving about him. But yet now people want to put doubts against him because we didn't pay £20 million, and oh, he came through the ranks, and look what happens there, that won't work out. That's a pretty negative view, and exactly. It's not one I subscribe to.
If I can make a couple of other points, you mentioned La Masia, I don't know how you pronounce it, but Barcelona's training academy. I think the current team, only one or two of them have actually come through those ranks. I mean, so you have to bear that in mind. Also, George Graham did say that, you know, many, many years ago, you know, teams like Arsenal, they are world clubs these days, and if you're going to bring on a player who's got a, you know, be on the same sort of level as Ozil and Sanchez, are the types of players we want to watch and need if we're going to win anything. You know, that's a very, very high bar. The other thing I would say is Celtic won the European Cup in the 60s, they had something like 9 players born within 10-mile radius of the ground. That, I think, yeah, I always say people never make predictions, but that, I think we can predict, is never going to happen again. That was just so incredible, because these are world clubs and it's a world game now. So that was utterly extraordinary. But that was a different world. It was a different time and era.
I think as well, something that Nigel mentioned there about Dele Alli and you know, the other player that's lit up the season for England as well has been Vardy. and you look at the time that he did in the lower leagues. Yeah. And, you know, George Graham was when he first arrived, anyway, he was great at that. You know, he picked up Perry Groves, you know, I'm not saying he's world class or anything, but he came in and he did a job. And there were others, you know, Dixon and Bold and Winterburn, all came from unfashionable lower league clubs. And that's just gone out the window now in this country. It's Ali and Vardy are the exceptions, and that's why everyone goes overboard on them. You know, because everyone goes, oh, look, there are these players down in the lower leagues. And, you know, we're never, I can't see us ever like doing something like that. I mean, I suppose you could argue we did it with Walcott, but that hasn't worked out well.
And it takes an exceptional young player at those type of ages with limited first-team football experience to be able to cope with the type of financial inducements which are going their way. You talked about the potential contract that Iwobi's on. It will be a small contract. So how will that change his attitude? And we see what's going on with Jack at the moment. Has Jack made it financially as a player? And you say, do people have greater connection with players who've come through? I think most people so desperately wanted Jack to make it, and he was making it, and that's why there's so much disappointment in the way he appears to be handling his career at the moment.
Well, I'm going to throw this one open to anyone who wants to answer it, but in regard to this idea of domestic players coming through, is the European Union election, were the result that we were to depart the European Union, is that going to have a significant effect on Arsenal's pool of available players?
Yes, undoubtedly it will, because to bring an overseas worker into the country, there's a very strict regime for footballers in terms of the number of games they've had to have played for their national team, and it depends
75%.
Well, it depends on what age they are.
Right.
So there's three different bands on the percentage of international games they've got to play, have played for their country over the previous period before you bring them in. So that will make it very difficult if you're trying to bring someone through on a sort of an academy or a young professional club.
So Cesc Fabregas, for example, would...
Well, he came at 16.
Must have been early in that, because he made his debut at 15, didn't he?
He did make his debut at 15. I don't think he'd be able to get away with that these days. Mm. There was an article in the paper about the number of current Premier League players who would not be eligible for their clubs if we had a Brexit situation. And clearly for the Premier League, it would be very disadvantaged, because part of the USP of the Premier League is they've got players from so many different countries. would it stop you bringing the very best through? I doubt it, but it would stop the sort of commercial farming there is of cheap imports.
So the argument then is possibly that a club of Arsenal's financial stature wouldn't necessarily suffer. Or would it?
It's relative to others. So would you suffer relative to other Premier League teams, or would you suffer relative to the other clubs in Europe who you're competing against?
Well, I'd say that obviously it would depend on how many internationals there are to go round and how much money you're paying to get them. So, for example, my thought is that because Arsenal are in such a good financial position, they can afford to buy players which other clubs might not be able to, simply because they can outbid them to an extent. But every Premier League club is not going to be able to sign international players that play 75% of their games. I'm just thinking, if you're an Arsenal fan, your criteria for saying yes or no is simply team selection.
I wouldn't be voting around your football club if I have fortunes of this.
That's how I always vote.
It's something to bear in mind anyway. Is there any players that we'd lose immediately, do you think?
I don't think it's retrospective, though.
Right, so it would be new signings.
I believe so, yeah.
Okay. All right, I'm going to go back
it's
to...
an important question we need to get clarified before the end, though, whatever.
23rd of June.
Sure, there'll be, once the football season is over and there is a lack of subject matter to write about, the newspapers will be onto it in full. I'm going to go back to the listener contributions here, and a tweet from Nikki Price, whose handle is Ultimate Dwarf, whatever that means. And his question is... is the top four all we can hope for next season? Well, I'm going to extend this to make more of a conversation, which is obviously this season has been very unusual. But is it a one-off, or is a more competitive Premier League actually the shape of things to come? I'll start with you, Ian, on that one.
I think it's an excellent question. I think that the hegemony, the top, the big three that it once was, Arsenal, Manchester United and Chelsea, and as was Liverpool, then they got superseded by Manchester City with all their money. I think that may go now, or at least it may be under threat. I mean, Tottenham are obviously a very, very big threat. I'm not sure that we'll see Leicester do what they've done again, because they've had 10 penalties this season, don't forget, which is double any other club. In fact, I believe that Jamie Vardy has had more penalties than any Premier League team, which is an incredible statistic. Tottenham, it'll be interesting to see how Leicester and Tottenham get on, by the way, when they've got proper Champions League football to worry about as well, and how that affects their squad. Who knows? But it probably will even out a bit. But I think that we should be aiming. I think that we can win it. People say that this is Arsenal's best chance this season. If we don't win it this season, then I don't think we're going to. Well, you know, we're about 14 points better off than Chelsea and etc. Manchester United dropped out two seasons ago. Chelsea four seasons ago. They could both, hopefully, certainly Chelsea, but Manchester United as well, drop out the top four this season. And you know, we've been pretty consistent throughout. In fact, I was just doing a bit of research today. If you go from the beginning of last season, no team in the Premier League has got more points than Arsenal. We've got 133 points, which is same as Man City, I think, and two more than Chelsea, or around the other way. So the consistency is not as bad as people think. And with these players coming back and being pushed by the Iwobis and the Bellerins and the Coquelins, yeah, I think that we can really go for more than top four. We're going for more than top four this season. Yeah, we should be definitely looking at the top three. And I don't rule out overtaking Tottenham and even Leicester. You know, Leicester have got a difficult run in. They've got to play Manchester United. Last game of the season, they're away at Chelsea. And you know, just imagine if we finished our game and we're level with Leicester and Costa's through on goal, and we say, well, do we want him to dive for a penalty or whatever? You know, who knows? But I'm encouraged. I think that there's too much pessimism around.
I'm glad Ian thinks that Chelsea will do us a favour on the last day if it comes to it. I don't think their fans will be thinking that.
Nigel, is this a case of, can I have some of what he's drinking?
I think the question was, is top four the best we can hope for next season? The fact is, the distorting influence of Champions League money is being diluted season by season. Next season, with the new television contracts, every club in the Premier League will have more TV money than the Champions League is worth in a season to the four English clubs are in it at the moment. Admittedly, they can't spend all that Champions League money on wages because of the agreement between the Premier League owners about how they can spend that TV money. But what we will see is those clubs who are well organised, recruit well, train well, work hard, will undoubtedly be pushing. And I think the fact that you've seen Leicester and Tottenham this season make such a good run of it will give hope to teams like West Ham. I mean, Palace at Christmas, November time? They were fifth. Okay, terrible run since. And then clearly the transitional years that Liverpool, Chelsea, Manchester City, Man United are having, you can't be in transition for too long. So you could be looking at a top 10, which is not interchangeable, but it should be super competitive. And this is why people are buying the Premier League, because it's going to be unbelievable. And I mentioned the TV money. When that TV money starts to roll in, every one of the 20 Premier League clubs will be in the top 30 richest clubs in Europe. And when I say richest, that's by revenues.
So even the promoted teams?
Even the promoted teams will be in the top 30. That shows you how potentially distortive it is. It doesn't mean that we're going to be dominating in Europe, because clearly that doesn't happen. But those clubs who are well organised, well trained, and as I say, work hard. And work hard, you look at how hard Tottenham work, you look at how hard Liverpool will be working, you look how hard Leicester are running, and Barca work hard. they work hard when they don't have the ball as well. And it's great to have all the tricks and skills and the possession and everything, but you've got to work when you haven't got the ball. And it's sort of the new way that the clubs are having to be run. So I think next season will be fantastic. Where we will finish in the mix, who knows?
Can Arsenal work hard, Mike?
We can. We've seen it on the odd occasion. I mean, Man City away last year was probably the blueprint that we all looked at and went, oh, finally the penny's dropped. But unfortunately, we don't see that very often.
Mm.
I think, you know, what Ian and Nigel said is true. You know, the next year is going to be, you know, we could come anywhere between first and eighth. And yeah, I wouldn't rule out coming first, but I think that's probably, I think it'll be close. You know, if we put a run together, if anyone puts a run together like Leicester have done this year, then yeah, but I'm not sure that would be us. I'm very excited though that we're going to be 24 month champions. We get a trophy for that, yeah. Must do.
Yes, those particular statistics have been frowned upon more than once. It must be said.
But I haven't heard that one before. So
no, I'm sure if Arsene's listening, we might hear it on Friday in the press conference. I mean, the interesting thing about that TV deal is, as I understand it, clubs, they can't simply splash a great deal of money, more money on wages, because there is an unofficial or agreed salary cap of sorts in existence in the Premier League. Can you confirm that? My understanding is they can only spend so much. The TV money can't necessarily go to wages. Not all of it, certainly.
Right. Try not to be too technical here.
Because what I think is that there might be evidence of a cartel here.
Oh, absolutely. Right. And I don't know if we're going to talk about American owners coming in into the club. This is into the league. This is exactly what they're looking at. It's to protect themselves. It's to retain money within the organisation. So let's say the average Premier League club next season will get an additional £40 million of TV revenue. If their wage bill is over £70 million, of that 40 new money coming in, Arsenal's new money coming in will be closer to 50 than 40, but let's say the average is 40. Of that 40 million of new money coming in year one, you can only spend 7 million of that in wages. And the second year, you can spend 7 on top, so then that's 14. And then the third year, it's 21. If your wage bill is over 70 million, that's from TV money. If you have increases in revenue in your other two sources, which is match day and commercial, if you're generating those, you can spend any increase in your commercial money on wages, but it's just the TV money which is restricted. So obviously money is fungible, but you know whether a pound comes from TV or gate receipts or commercial. So you've mentioned the word cartel, which is, you know, it's a hard word to get your mind around in a competitive environment. But clearly they are doing this to protect themselves. It's not as though the wages are shabby as they are anyway.
Mm.
My question is, what happens to the other money?
Mm.
Is it going into infrastructure?
Mm.
Is it going into stadium improvements? Is it going into academy facilities?
Transfers?
Because it goes to a certain extent, and you say, we can't spend it all. I'm not saying Arsenal at the stage where they can't spend it all. Clearly there's a lot in reserve at the moment. But if... And it is an agreement, it's not an understanding, it's an agreement between the owners that this is how they're going to do it. So that calls into question the actual finances of what's happening to the 20 clubs over the longer period.
So if they wanted to spend, so in your example, that gives us 33 million that we can't spend on wages, yeah. We could use our transfers, presumably.
But a transfer comes with a wage as well.
Sure.
Yes, but, absolutely, yes.
You could sell someone for a million and buy someone for 34, and that's your 33 million, and the wages are comparable.
And this is why it was interesting when Arsene was asked at one of the press conferences soon after the television contract was confirmed about, it was at the time of 20s plenty and what was happening to the away scheme and the away supporters initiative. He said, no, there's no money because we need it all for players and wages. Well, Arsene's a little bit out of touch there. Because the owners are saying, that's not where it's going.
Mm. Okay. I mean, the interesting thing about this season is there has been previously a tradition, for want of a better phrase, in the Premier League, that the teams with the biggest wage bills have generally taken the top positions. Now, do Arsenal actually deserve a bit of credit for finishing or looking like they might finish above their biggest spending rivals, which is specifically Manchester United, Manchester City and Chelsea? Because we haven't heard much credit, Ian. I think it's an apt one for you. Do you, is it an achievement of sorts?
Well, yeah, I think it is. Yeah, I mean, the world has changed so much in the last 20 years since Wenger arrived. I mean, with the 2005 and the Chelsea with Abramovich coming in, and more latterly the Manchester City money. So I think, yeah, we have to take these things into account. But I forget which game it was recently, but he was asked specifically about the big three, Chelsea, Manchester City and Manchester United. And he makes a complete distinction, but Chelsea and Manchester City in one category, because that's really false money. It's money from outside of football. Whereas the Manchester United's money, it is their money. They've created it themselves within their business. Well, you know, love them or loathe them. And Wenger makes that distinction, and I think he's right to do so. But yeah, you have to compare like with like. And people may say, well, that just shows that what Leicester and Tottenham have done this season is fantastic. And well, yeah, that's true. But then again, you know, you look at a golf major, it's quite regular that you see people at the top of the leaderboard after the first round that you've never even heard of. Sometimes it's even amateurs in the even top of it. So it's different from inconsistent year on year. And I don't think that he's given enough credit for making Champions League for 18 years or whatever it is now. It's only Real Madrid are the only other team in Europe to have done the same. So, yeah, cut him some slack.
Well, I'll go on to the Champions League now, because Arsenal were number seven in this year's Deloitte Money League in terms of the earnings of the club. Yeah, and yet they haven't been able to make the last eight in the Champions League for the past six campaigns. I'll just bring in a tweet here from Jonathan Houseman, a regular tweeter. He says, "With Arsene Wenger's biggest failure of his managerial Arsenal career coming up, which is specifically the failure to win the league, could it be that he has no mental strength rather than his players?" Well, I've shoehorned that in because what I really want to know, in respect of that glass ceiling, for want of a better phrase, in terms of Champions League and to an extent domestically, is there a fundamental flaw in the team? Why is this happening every year?
Good question. It's the $64,000 question, or probably even worth a lot more than that these days, I suppose. I don't know. I think that the Monaco defeat was particularly disappointing and maybe proves Jonathan's point, because it's almost, there's no shame to lose to the likes of Barcelona and Bayern Munich, especially if you're going out on the away goals rule or just by the odd goal. Maybe that does show that there is something lacking. I've thought that myself on occasions. I will be honest. So yeah, it's a reasonable point.
It's a mystery to me, Kevin, because for Arsene, I believe it is so important in the twilight of his career. The European achievement is, I think, so important to him. I don't understand why he's not doing those extra things to make it happen.
Well,
those extra things are, he can have anything he wants. He can have any support network. And he still wants to be able to do it his way. And that crushing defeat at home to Monaco, crushing. We everyone was rejoicing. That's the best draw you can get. And it's his old club. And we go down there so close. That at what stage does he say, I'm going to have to do something different? Because as you know, if you keep on repeating it, the same thing's going to happen. And that sort of, there's no shame going out to Bayern Munich. There's no shame going out to Barcelona. They're genuine top four European clubs. But why we can't get into that final eight, the quarterfinals, which are going on tonight as we're talking here, someone's got to seriously ask Arsene how much he wants it.
Mike, Arsenal are unique in Europe in that the night before the match, they don't do a training session in the opposition stadium. Do you think that's at all a factor in this?
I think that's probably clutching at straws a little bit. Yes, it might be, but I don't think Man City did a training session yesterday in PSG.
Really?
They held their last training session back home and then flew out, which I saw something on Twitter saying it delayed the press conference until about this time last night. I think what Nigel's saying is true. It's, why won't he do more? Why won't Arsene, whether it's bring in a coach or bring in the players that we all think he should have brought in, just to try and get us over that hurdle. I think not making the last eight for how many seasons it is now, six, seven, eight, something like that. Some of that's been down to bad luck. Some of that's been down to drawing Barcelona and drawing Bayern Munich and coming close and, glorious failure. But the Monaco one's the one that's just going to stand out there, isn't it? That was the one, as you say, the perfect draw. This is the year we're going to get through to the last day, and then it's, bit of luck here and a bit of luck there and a lucky, fluky goal on a referee's decision, and before you know it, you're in the final. And yet we blew it in the home leg. Like we've done so many times, and in the manner that we've done so many times, going hell for leather for the equaliser and giving away that third goal right at the end. And we all see it, and we all get frustrated by it, and I'm sure Wenger does as well, but he's the one that can do something about it, and that's the real frustration for the fans, is that we don't see what he's doing. I'm sure he's doing something. You've got to wish that he's not taking home his £8 million a year and doing nothing. But we don't see it. We don't, because ultimately all we see is the results on the pitch. We don't see the training sessions and what's being said and going on behind the scenes. And that's the frustration.
Ian, do you think more could have been achieved with this group of players under a different manager?
No, I'm not sure that necessarily that's the case. I think, again, you have to look at the injuries we've had this season. I mean, Wilsh has been out for the whole season. Effectively, we've not had Welbeck either. Cazorla's still out, of course, and Ramsey. We've had our two undoubted world-class players in Sanchez and Ozil out for considerable time. I don't think that we've done that badly, all things considered, to be honest. And I think the future does look really, really bright. But I think you also have to ask, who do you want to bring in? And, we've all got day jobs. And, what if your boss said to you, OK, we're going to get rid of you and we're going to get someone who hasn't actually achieved what you've achieved in the game? Because whoever you get in, that they haven't got Wenger's record of 18 consecutive years. OK, if you're going to get a Guardiola, yeah, maybe, but he didn't want to come to us. So who are you going to replace him with? People say Jurgen Klopp, but what's he done at Liverpool in the time he's been there? They're languishing.
Do you know Guardiola didn't want to come?
Well, he hasn't come, has he?
Was he asked?
I think the suggestion is there is that he did want to come, but we didn't want to make the position available.
The
biggest concern is, Kevin, that are we going to be approaching the situation that we were when we were losing our best players two or three years ago, with people looking around saying, I'm going to end up fabulously wealthy wherever I play, and I want to win things, I want to be challenging, I want to be in semi-finals and finals. And the body language of one or two players at the moment, when things aren't going well, gives me concerns for the future, whether we will be able to hold on to our genuinely world-class players who are able to go to two or three other clubs for similar amount of remuneration, if we're not challenging at the very top.
Well, I will mention here Harold Shand, whose Twitter handle is GeorgeKnows89. He tweeted, "We need a clear out this summer. Who goes? Giroud, Walcott, The Ox and Gibbs?" My question is, which players do we foresee departing this summer? Let's go one by one with some of the names. Does anyone think Ozil is going to depart this summer?
I think there's a risk. I do. I think there's a genuine risk. I don't think he, the comments that he made last week while he was on international duty and therefore out of the reach of the Arsenal press office, I think were telling. I think Wenger's reaction was also telling. And I think that could create a rift, which may see him go, well, you know what, I can go elsewhere, make the same money, and perhaps have a better chance. And, you know, Real Madrid, whether he goes back there or whether he goes to a club in the Premier League, I could see that. And I don't think Sanchez, I don't think we should rule that out either. I mean, he's not come back from injury, the player he was, and is there a sense of frustration there as well?
Ian, you're quite adamant Ozil's not going.
Well, I think the players we will get rid of will sort of his natural decline again. The likes of Arteta, who will probably never see play again for Arsenal, and he's been a great servant since he came after the 8-2 defeat at Man U. Obviously, Rizicki will go now, I think, although he's done well for us. Flamini maybe as well. I think there's the peripheral midfield players, which hopefully will give us money to boost others. But I think Gibbs is vying for the left-back position with Monreal. He's just behind him a bit at the moment. But, yeah, that's a bit of a race, and it's healthy competition. Giroud, I think, is a £10 million player who's done very well. He's been good value for money, but he's not a world-class player. So he will play less. He would have played less this season if Welbeck had been fit, no doubt.
So would you keep Giroud?
Probably not, actually. No, I mean, maybe as a squad player, but if we can replace him with someone better and save the wages and that, then yeah, maybe. Walcott is a disappointment. I was no question about that. But the Ox, I think you've got to give him longer. Yeah, he is still a young man, and you know, we were all getting very frustrated. Was it two seasons ago now with Ramsey, thinking, you know, he's great talent from Cardiff, and I remember seeing him play in for Cardiff in the semi-finals at Wembley. But then suddenly he clicked and he had a fantastic season. So yeah, I think we've got to give the likes of the Ox time. I think he does try and too much with the ball on occasions. He's trying to impress too much, but there's healthy places now. And yeah, but people talk about having a clear out, but you know, you look at the bench that we had for the Watford game, the likes of Campbell and who was playing only this season but can't get in now. And then the players I mentioned earlier, they come back from injury, those four or five, Cazorla and Wilshere included. You know, it's tough to pick an 18, let alone an 11, I would have said.
Alexis and Ozil, Nigel, do you think... I mean, they both make comments about the team effectively not having what it takes to win a title. Is this a coded message to say?
Absolutely. I think it's similar to the discussions that happened in private with Fabregas in his last season, right, where show me who's coming in. I think the classic example was the game home to Bournemouth, where Ozil's created maybe a dozen chances and Theo's been on the end of most of them, and Ian Wright saying on the television afterwards, I mean, I want to play, I'm scoring 30 goals a season. And Ozil's looking and thinking, what else have I got to do? It's an international summer season, so Ozil's off with his people. That often creates a lot of movement. Sometimes you get your moves done before the international break, international summer tournament. I don't think there's a major clear-out happening. My concern would be those players who've got options to go places, and Hector's clearly a big concern because Alves is coming to the end. And if it's going back to Spain, it's sort of going home, so there's nothing you can do about that. But to lose a Sanchez or an Ozil, I really think is not good business. And if you wanted to lose someone like a Theo, I don't see how you can move someone on that type of salary unless you're giving them away. Mm. And it's just prohibitive. Mm. So I can see one or two sort of fill-in additions, maybe a marquee name somewhere up front, but I don't see major overhauling, assuming there's going to be no change in the managerial status, which I very much doubt.
Okay, quick word for Nicholas Bent now, who has been released by Wolfsburg. So another one that didn't...
On the Brighton, mate, the Derby played, started his first game in God knows how long, last weekend.
Oh, well.
And Sonogo played reasonably well last night at Ipswich.
Right.
They drew nil-nil.
You listened to a different commentary to me then. He played,
he did miss,
I think.
He did miss when he was through.
He got a valley the other day. Well, a few weeks ago now.
As with death and taxes, unless you are David Cameron's father, who avoided one of those fates, it is inevitable that one day Arsene Wenger will depart Arsenal. One assumes there will be something of a power vacuum come that day. Should we expect turbulent times in the immediate aftermath of his leaving? Mike, will Arsenal do a Manchester United?
Well, that's the fear, isn't it? And I think that's you know, Wenger's supporters will point to that with some justification and say that that's what you're wishing for. And if anything, I'm probably more worried because of that, but I'm more worried that it could happen because I don't trust anyone on the board to make the right appointment. If Wenger goes, we're going to need someone to come in who is, and I don't want Mourinho, but someone of that ilk who is so strong-willed that he'll force whatever he wants on to the club and the board.
Well, Antonio Conte is bringing in.
But I can't see the board being willing to accept someone of that view, having had Wenger there for so long.
So Antonio Conte bringing about six or seven people from his own backroom team is not going to happen at Arsenal.
I'd be surprised. I'd be astonished, actually. Okay. I think Wenger will have a big say in it as well, which is also a concern.
But the thing is, I mean, these guys who are working under Wenger, they're Wenger's people. They're not the board's people. No. They're real hired hands who Wenger is loyal to. Now, okay, you could argue if Wenger goes upstairs and he says, I don't want him to be sacked, that would compromise the club's selection of manager. But is that going to happen?
I can see that as being a risk.
Okay. Ian, what do you think? A power vacuum?
Well, I hope it won't happen for a number of years yet. I hope he'll at least see out his contract until the end of next season. And I would ask people to please be patient. I know it can be difficult at times, and I feel the pain. But I think that he'll... If we have a good season that I'm hoping for next season, in what I think will be, again, a very strong league with money being spent by the other league clubs, then, yeah, I think that he could be around for another few seasons yet in any case. He's still only 66. It's not old these days. It's a big job, but I think he can go on for some time yet. So I'm not sure that it's an issue quite yet.
Okay. Nigel, I mean, if you were a betting man, do you think Arsene will be here beyond the end of next season?
No, I don't.
You think he will call it a day?
I think 2017, see out the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And if we have what we imagine will be a similar season, it's going to be super competitive next season. I suspect he's just going to feel as though he can't take it any further. I'm sure the club will be begging him and enticing him with a new contract, and there will be discussions about coming onto the board, going upstairs, staying involved. Whether Arsene wants to do that or not, I don't know. But I just look at him, and Ian says he's only 66. He looks tired to me.
He does work long hours.
He does, unbelievable, and I think the more and more he does, he's just driving himself into a hole.
Well, he won't delegate.
It's about the energy he gives to. So Simeone is an exception, or Klopp. The way they interact with their players when they're on the sideline, or Pochettino, can sort of give them energy. And I sort of feel sometimes that Arsene's almost inert or sucking energy out of them because he can't do anything from the sideline. He's got to wait for the time for the subs and everything else. And there's no, when things aren't going right, he's not the 12th man. And I think the younger breed of person, because he's training with the players, that's sort of what we're missing at the moment. So back to the question, I hope it happens all very with decorum and plenty of respect for what's been achieved. But I seriously hope that June 2017, if not before, that we are prepared for potential transition.
And do you see this power vacuum creating a problem, or do you think it will just be filled by change?
Everything is set up at the club to be a super club. Everything's in place apart from two or three key positions which can't be filled at the moment because Arsene clearly doesn't want them filled. So when David Dean was sacked, Arsenal could have had anyone come in to do that sort of director of football type of role. Didn't want anyone. You could have any technical director you want. I know the manager's got to be in charge of transfers and whatever, but it's almost like martyrdom. He wants to be doing absolutely everything so he can live or die by his own success. You could, the vacuum we talk about can be plugged by bringing the person in who will come with two or three appointments. Most managers only stay at clubs for 3-4 years these days, so then you're on a stop-start type of thing. So with Conte, if he brings the six people in, then they all go. You have to bring another in. There's no continuity, but I'm not too sure whether that's modern football these days or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No continuity.
Very good.
You can edit that out if you like.
I mean, Chelsea and Manchester City will have new managers next season. There is a belief that Louis van Gaal will be replaced at Manchester United. Do we look on enviously as other clubs get in new managers?
Not necessarily. I think some do, clearly. Some people, Arsenal fans, do. I'll probably look enviously at Man City because they've got Guardiola, who I think most Arsenal fans would have probably crawled over broken glass for.
Well, I'm actually envious of Chelsea fans because I think Conte is exactly what they need.
That's interesting. I mean, you follow Italian football a lot closer than I do, so I'll bow to your...
He's a hard man, though, isn't he? He's going to upset a lot of people. Though.
Yeah, if he upsets the wrong people, they haven't got the dressing room. You know, if Terry goes in the summer, he's not been offered a new contract yet. If he goes, then they haven't got that power in the dressing room. But I've still got Abramovich, and Abramovich still likes things done a certain, you know, his way or out the door.
The thing that makes me envious, Kevin, is that those managers will come in, and I think there will be a single objective for them. And for Chelsea, it won't be to top four finish. It will be to get back winning. And for Man City, it will be to get back winning. And if there's change at Man United, yes, they were out of Champions League, but you know what the objectives of those people coming in. I'm confused of what the current objectives are set at our club. What's the minimum outcome? There's clearly no direction from the owner in terms of football performance, and I think it'd be very difficult for someone like Ivan to sit down with Arsene and say, come on, Arsene, this is what we want to achieve next year, and Arsene's going to look at it and think, oh, okay, Ivan, right, now let's go out training. What makes me envious.
If I could have a couple of points on Kevin, I know you're the one who's meant to be asking the question all the way around. But yeah, you say that you think Conte's the right man for Chelsea, but you wouldn't have said that 9 months ago when Mourinho was basking in his latest Premier League title. So something happened in the meantime. Yet Chelsea are not as stable as maybe people thought they were. Maybe we might have been looking enviously at Chelsea 9 months ago. We certainly are not now. And yet at the beginning of the season, they would have aimed to have won the league again. You're absolutely right. You look at them, I've got the league table here. They're 10th. They're 25 points behind Leicester. They're 14 points behind us, even though they've taken 6 points off us. So, yeah, ambition is one thing, but they haven't achieved. And I should be very pleased if they don't make Champions League football this season, which is obviously highly likely. So, brilliant. And that, incidentally, will mean that it's going to be difficult for them to get the players that they want because they won't want to be playing in the Europa League. Or
why are we benchmarking ourselves against a super club who's won the Champions League in the very recent past, has won more trophies in the last 10 years than we have in the last 20. Why is that the benchmark?
They're funny money. It's not proper money, though, is it?
Point, Ian. But why is that your benchmark for the season? Look how poorly Chelsea have done.
Well, because it's true that, yeah, they had all this ambition that you say that you think that Arsenal lack. You think they've got for next season? Yeah, sure, they'll be after number one. But
the point is, they got rid of Mourinho because
they did. Yeah,
he wasn't meeting their ambitions.
And the players were on strike.
The point is, Wenger is meeting Arsenal's ambitions because they have different ambitions. And this brings me on to the next question. Mm-hmm. It's the quote from Stan, which we've all heard. For me, being an individual owner, I have to have some sort of reality involved. If you want to win championships, then you would never get involved. Now, my question here is, how important is the owner to a club's thirst for success? Is it relevant?
I think with Kroenke, he is obviously not a dyed-in-the-wool Arsenal fan. He is primarily a businessman, and you know, he wants to make money out of the club. And when he eventually sells it, when his son and his empire eventually sell it, yes, I don't doubt that. But
do you think it's holding us back in any way?
I think taking £3 million out of the club for the last 2 years, and probably forever and ever, amen, in future. Whilst buried in the footnotes on the final page of the report and accounts, yeah, that does hold us back to a degree. It's 1% of our turnover, but I don't think other than that it makes a huge difference. Because don't forget, most people say that Wenger's got too much power. So, if that's the case, then what is Kroenke, his desires matter anyway, really?
Well, would it affect the targets set the manager by the board?
Well, what if they said to him, to Wenger, well, you've got to win it over the next two seasons or you're out?
I think we've got to recognise that we have a passive financial owner who's not going to set direction like that. What he doesn't want is people knocking on the door saying, we need more money. So the people at Liverpool, the Fenway Group, have had to put money in for the new stand. They've had to do the financing. Arsenal have been through all that aggravation. It's there. It should be self-sufficient. And it can be self-sufficient. The thing it lacks, though, is the direction from somewhere to say, this is what we should be achieving. Because it's very difficult for Ivan, as chief executive, to set objectives for the manager who's earning four times what the chief executive is. And if it's not coming from the owner and it's not coming from the board, then to me it seems like it's set by Arsene. And it's disappointing that we don't hear more from Stan. He comes to the annual general meetings. He doesn't address the shareholders. We have less and less shareholders now. But let's have some vision. But he hasn't got the vision for it, so it's probably best to stay still, stay quiet on it. But then where's the vision coming from? Ivan once talked about us, not that long ago, Bayern Munich are in our sights. That's what we want to be. I don't think that went down too well with the manager. We don't hear about that too often now, do we?
Mm.
So it's not going to come from the owner. That's not changing. Is it going to come from the board? Look at the board. How can that be done? We're in this sort of holding pattern.
Do you think Ivan regrets those comments about Bayern now? It gets thrown at him on a regular basis.
If we have another June Q&A, it'll be thrown at him by me. Trust me on that.
And I mean, the interesting thing with Stan, you say he's not quiet, and then he comes out with a comment like that. You know,
but it was almost like Ozil going on an international break. He's on a sports forum in the States, and he's a multiple sports owner.
Yeah.
So it wasn't an Arsenal-specific thing. It's what he does with the NFL team. To a certain extent, it's what he's done with his basketball team, although basketball's his passion. But you can see what Liverpool are trying to achieve and the sort of connection there is with the ownership group there. We've got to appreciate that we're not going to have that, so it's got to come from somewhere else.
Right, we've been going for over an hour. I'm just going to finish with a question for the panel. I only need two answers to this, both one word each, or maybe two. But, number one, who will win the Premier League this season? Number two, who do you think will win it next season? I'm going to start with Ian.
I think Leicester would just about scrape over the line this season, but it's going to be very, very close, and that's more than two words. If I had to put my money next season, I would say I think that Arsenal can win it next season, I really do.
So that would be your pick.
Yeah, but I think it could be very, very close. And you look at the Leicester game against Southampton on Sunday, Simpson handball at 0-0. It could easily have been a penalty and a sending off. 3-point difference immediately.
There's no doubt that fortune plays a part in any title. Nigel, this season, next season?
This season, Leicester City. Greatest story in Premier League history. Next season, Manchester City.
Mike?
Ditto.
Is it obvious?
Yeah. Well, I don't think it's obvious, but I think I can't see Leicester falling away now. And next year, I think the Guardiola effect, they will spend big in the summer.
Yeah.
And they'll do it.
They'll kick on.
Okay. I think it's been a fantastic hour's chat. I have just got time to plug the current issue with the Gooner. It went on sale before last Saturday's match against Watford. As a cover illustration of Mesut Ozil with a caption, praying for a miracle. Inside there are features on watching Arsenal from the opposition section, sneaking into the old Highbury Stadium, a discussion on the importance of Alisher Usmanov retaining his 30% shareholding, pieces on Mohamed El Neni, Danny Welbeck and Jack Wilshere, as well as the implications of a vote to leave the European Union for Arsenal's playing roster, which we did briefly touch on earlier, and plenty more. It will be on sale at matches against Palace and West Brom for £2.50 from sellers on your route to the ground, and can also be purchased from the online Gooner website. With that plug over, a reminder that you can contact us via Twitter at GoonerPodcast and email GoonerPodcast@gmail.com. Thank you for your questions and topics submitted for today. And with that, it is goodbye from Mike.
See you soon.
Nigel.
Goodbye.
And Ian.
Keep the faith.
We will be back with another edition in May to reflect on the end of the season, hopefully in celebratory mood, miracles allowing. This is your host, Kevin Witcher, saying goodbye and thanks for listening. La-di-da-di-da, la-di-da-di-dee, all good friends and jolly good company, wahey!